Today on the LA Food Podcast, I'm your host Lucas Servodio, and in 2023, a bunch of food journalists made lists, Father Saul and I checked them twice, and we're here to tell you which ones were naughty and which ones were nice. Welcome, dear listener, to the first ever LA Food Pod holiday party. It's the only holiday party you can enjoy from the comfort of your own AirPods. And while I know the decorations are a bit lackluster and the snacks consist of Triscuits and the soy sauce packets that Father Saul had accumulated in his desk drawer, who needs actual food when you can sit around and talk about food? We're joined by none other than Father Saul to talk holiday plans and to try our hands at some festive mixology. We're making something called a Merry Margarita, brought to us by our friends at Hornitos. Will we like it? Will we hate it? Will you want to try making it for your holiday gathering? Listen to find out. But that's not all, because what's a holiday party without some sort of game? In a game that only makes sense in the context of the LA Food Podcast, Father Saul and I have combed the food lists of 2023 from the likes of the LA Times, Eater, The Infatuation, and more to draft which ones we thought did the best job. It's a deliciously convoluted white elephant of sorts, except instead of gifts, what you get to walk away with is our arbitrary ranking of a bunch of other arbitrary rankings. What's not to love? Finally, on a slightly more serious note, I just wanted to take a moment to wish you and your loved ones a heartfelt happy holiday, dear listener. I saw an article this week by our friend Karen Palmer at SF Gate on the rough year restaurants have had, and I just want to say, I hope 2024 brings happier, more prosperous times for everyone associated with LA's food and beverage community. Thanks for being a part of our little LA Food Pod community this year. Here's to you, friends. Without further ado, let's chow down. Joining us today for a very special holiday edition of the LA Food Podcast is a man whose takes on food and basketball inspired the holiday classic Baby It's Cold Outside. It's Father Saul. Father Saul, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. One of your more convoluted openings. So you're saying that I have bad takes on food shows and basketball. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like ice cold takes. Baby It's Cold Outside has become a bit of a problematic song in recent years. I didn't mean any of that, but I just meant the fact that your takes are cold as opposed to hot.
Okay, well, let me respond to that in two ways. First of all, my basketball takes are never wrong. I am on point always. My food takes, I feel similarly about. I will say, you know, looking back at our Great British Bake Off conversation last week, I feel 100% correct still. The one tweak I wish I'd made listening back to that is, you know, I really emphasize how it's not a food show. I will grant that it's kind of a food show. What I will say, what I really was trying to communicate and what I really wish I'd hammered on instead is it's not a competition show. That's what it's really not. It's not a competition show, really.
Dear listener, the only reason Father Saul wants to correct the record on this is because he has received some disagreement, hatred from listeners.
Not even. Those listeners, by the way, terrible. All wrong. What are you talking about? Is before, go watch the show before it was Americanized or when it was way more British. No, the whole point is that it's still super British. That's why Americans like it. Americans like it when it's super British. It was never about whether or not the show got Americanized later. I watched an early season. Don't come at me with that. Please.
Well, look, listeners, you asked for an interactive podcast. You're getting an interactive podcast. So if you do disagree with any of our takes, be sure to put them in the Instagram comments because clearly they don't get under our skin whatsoever, right?
I'm happy to fight with our listeners. Let's go, man. Let's go. I'm right.
Let's go. Look, this is, for all intents and purposes, the closest thing to an LA Food Podcast holiday party that you're going to get as the only employee. So happy holidays, bud.
Hey, happy holidays to you, man. What do you have planned coming up for these winter break?
Well, it won't be very wintry at all. Just a very pleasant retreat to the desert, just to relax, find myself, spend some quality time with family, you know, cook some good food. We're going to cook some Feast of the Seven Fishes. We've been talking about. Yeah. Our annual tradition, which is hilarious that it's not an actual Italian thing. In fact, my family very much makes fun of me for this because I've adopted this Italian-American tradition of the Feast of the Seven Fishes. But it's such a beautiful way to celebrate New Year's Eve. So we're plotting our menu. One year, you absolutely have to come and spend it with us.
I'm happy to come. I like that you've adopted it. I'll come on the condition that I'm allowed to get as drunk as Donna Barzato was during her episode about the Seven Fishes.
Buddy, if you have the ability to get that drunk, you deserve it. What are you doing for the holidays?
Similarly, not very wintry. I'm going to be heading down to Florida on Saturday, hanging out at my parents' place in Delray Beach. But then, between the 21st and 26th, going to Morocco with family. Going to spend 4 days up in Morocco. We kind of do like an international trip a year sort of as a family at this point. My parents are basically retired and like to get out and about and basically just like announce to me and my sister where we're expected to be like halfway through the year being like, guys, well, you're going to Morocco. I was like, all right, okay. Got to buy my ticket for that. And then it's a good time. It'll be a blast, but mostly spending and returning to Florida, hanging out, getting warm, all that good stuff.
Look at us snowbirds. Well, that's a pretty sweet deal with Morocco. Does your family have any like holiday traditions that you do every year?
I mean, I was saying it a little bit flippantly, but it really is that we usually try to get out of the U.S. My parents are both immigrants, and even growing up, we would either go to Pakistan or Europe, where my mom spent time growing up, and basically, you know, change the scenery. They would see family, see old family friends and stuff like that. So, look, we don't obviously celebrate Christmas. I was raised Muslim. There was a period of time when I was growing up when Eid landed in the winter holiday. Which is kind of cool because we got to like overlap with the rest of my friends and stuff on their respective holiday traditions. But given its lunar calendar, it's now shifted away. And yeah, no, it's mainly traveling, relaxing, having a good time.
Togetherness seems like the theme. Well, that's pretty exciting. Are you planning on doing any good eating in Morocco, or are you just leaving it in the hands of your parents?
That one I've left entirely in the hands of my parents. I have no idea. There's like this group chat with like 50, because it's not just my parents. There's like family, friends and stuff coming who I don't know. And there's this WhatsApp chat with like 15 people, all Pakistani like aunties who are just talking and talking and talking. And I can't even, I like muted it. I'm like, I'm going to show up and be told where to go.
That's a terrible idea. When you get there, they're going to have all these inside jokes you have absolutely no idea about.
I'm very much okay with that.
Fair enough. Well, look, speaking of inside jokes, it's not really a joke. We are drinking on today's podcast, courtesy of our friends over at Hornitos, the tequila company. Saul, had you had Hornitos prior to today?
I absolutely had. Yeah, of course. I've stumbled across a Hornitos or two in my life.
You might say you're horny for Hornitos.
I might not say that, but go ahead.
But go off, King. So our friends over at Hornitos sent us a recipe for what they call a Merry Margarita, and we have made it. We have made it, and it is here on the podcast. It is the drink of choice at the LA Food Podcast holiday party. I'm going to take a sip for the first time. Here we go, okay? Cheers, bud. All right.
Cheers.
All I taste is tequila. Not going to lie.
Oh, interesting. Oh, what I taste is pomegranate. So my thing – so basically, it's a good recipe, I think. It's Hornitos tequila, pomegranate juice, some raspberry liqueur, and lime. Pretty standard, good tequila cocktail. Mix it with some citrus and get a nice, beautifully colored drink here.
We forgot to say, for those who are not watching this in the video format that actually doesn't even exist, it is it's not quite a crimson color. It's like a light red, wouldn't you say? Almost like Pinot Noir-ish.
Yeah, to me it kind of reminds me of a sunset almost color, right? Like an orange. If when you get the light on it, right, you kind of have that nice ruby sunset color. Looks very appetizing. The ingredients are the ingredients I would look for on a menu anywhere. The thing that I think I've made my mistake on is the pomegranate ratio. The pomegranate for me, and it could be also the kind of pomegranate juice I got, but you got to be really careful with pomegranate. It's overwhelming. And so for me, I get like a really – and it's good news for me because I love pomegranate just in general. It's my favorite fruit, favorite juice, but it does I think overwhelm some of the more like other potential components of this. But not a bad cocktail, man. I've never tried raspberry liqueur before. Happy about that. And Hornitos, always happy to put it to good use.
The exact ratios of this cocktail are 1.5 parts tequila, Hornitos tequila, of course, 3/4 parts raspberry liqueur, which I'm using Chambord. I'm not sure what you're using,
Same. Yep.
Chambord. So it's black raspberry liqueur. And 3/4 parts pomegranate juice and 1/2 part fresh lime juice. I think the lime juice is an awesome touch in there. I will say I hear you on the pomegranate piece. However, I use Trader Joe's pomegranate juice, which is a little bit more diluted. And so it's not quite as intense and like syrupy like pom is. So I think I'm not getting that punch you in the face pomegranate flavor. I'm getting more so like a slight hint, a slight sort of like, you know, hey, I'm back here, but it's not like in your face by any means. So maybe that was your mistake.
It could have been. And you know what? I think in either case, the one exact thing that would make this a perfect cocktail, a little bit of seltzer. A bit of seltzer, I think, would elevate the whole thing.
Yeah, you like a little fizz in your cocktails?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I sure do. Yeah, and it kind of almost becomes like the seltzer almost comes as a medium by which everything else mixes together. I know very little about cocktails, but this is not a bad one. And thank you to Hornitos.
Okay, we're going to play a little game, though, with our tequila, which is I'm going to have a list in my mind when we do our selection of the best lists of the year. And if you pick that list, you have to take a shot and vice versa.
The entire list verbatim?
No. Okay, so here are the rules, okay? Basically, I have a list in my mind, right? One of the lists out there that have been published in 2023.
Yep.
Now, if you select that in the draft, that specific list, let's use the list as an example, right? Like the Infatuation's list of best chicken sandwiches in Los Angeles.
Right. Right.
If you say it, you have to take the drink, okay?
Okay. All right.
And
fair.
Vice versa. Like this is,
yeah.
You take one.
It's not going to happen, but yeah, this is a good game. This is a good game. I like it a lot.
I feel like this will happen because there are clearly some lists out there that are winners.
It's true. I'm excited to dive into this conversation generally. Almost our whole podcasting of like over the course of the year has been building to this moment as we've talked repeatedly about lists and reviews and how to judge restaurants, like how writers and outlets pull together lists of restaurants. But I try to get I went deep and I also went like a little out the box. So for example, we talked about this really compelling list about Mexico City restaurants recently, right? That was created not just by a single writer, but by like a committee of locals who were debating and chose their favorite local spots. That's like probably the best list of the year. It is. I didn't put it on my list because we've just talked about it and I'm mentioning it now as like an honorable mention thing, right? So the reason why I think we may not have overlap is because I went a little deep. It'll be really exciting if we do though. That'd be some true like kismet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know that you actually did your research for this podcast for once. So I personally am really appreciative and I feel like it's a holiday miracle.
The hardest I've ever worked on Christmas. Well, I don't know if it's Christmas, but yeah.
Yeah. You're like a Dickens novel. Okay. Before we talk about, we do our draft of the best lists of 2023. Let's talk about the list that came out a couple weeks ago, which I talked a little bit about a couple episodes ago, and that's Bill Addison's 101 Best Restaurants list in the LA Times. I know that you had some thoughts on this list too.
Yeah, no, just quick ones. And some of them will even come back up again as we get into the draft. But first of all, I want to say I appreciated the little monologue you did to open. I think it was last episode, maybe two episodes ago. Really, really thoughtful stuff, man. Surprising from you, but hey. You know, broken clocks right twice a day. And I think you really hit a lot of good points on it. The two things that I would say that really stood out. One, I really appreciated the point, and I went back and read the opening of the list. The point that this doesn't have to be a ranking, right? It doesn't have to be. And the way the opening of the list is from Bill says it's like a snapshot, right? It's like he doesn't really lean into it being a ranking at all, but then There's numbers in the list and you go down and people will immediately make assumptions. The second thing is, I wonder, and this is not something I think you necessarily mentioned, though correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know why this list is on Bill alone, right? Taking the lesson from that article about Mexico City, you know, this list used to be Jonathan Gold's list. Irreplaceable Jonathan Gold. And Bill's had to like step into huge shoes, right? As you mentioned on during your opening and fill the role. But I feel like he doesn't necessarily have to. This could be a more collaborative list and pull in different perspectives. Love Bill. And I think he did a great job on this list as well. I think some of the flaws you pointed out were the correct flaws. It's just hard for one person who is not Jonathan Gold to really like, because it's not just about having eaten at all these restaurants and reviewed them. It's about having like a truly deep sense of the heartbeat of LA. And I know Bill is great, but J. Gold had that in a way basically no one else did when it came to food in LA. And so I feel like this could be a more collaborative, you know, a perspective from different folks and have it debated and like, you know, all that stuff. So those are my two headline thoughts. I have another one that I'll share with you as we get into the lists, but those were my two headlines.
Well, you know what I think about that is that I think that that's actually an interesting way to get ahead of some of the critiques that often happen to Bill when it comes to this list. And it is that he's actually not from Los Angeles, I believe. And I feel like that's a really sort of like lame thing to lob at someone because Los Angeles is kind of famous for being a city of transplants. You know what I mean? Like you throw a stone, you're going to hit like 40 people. Not that I recommend throwing stones or hitting people, but if you were, you would hit somebody who had moved here to like pursue a career in the industry, right? Or to just get away from the cold. And so it is like transplants are very, very much make up the city. Like they are very much a fabric of the city. And so to lob that critique at him is kind of unfair, but I do think it would be interesting to that point for him to be like, hey, this is my perspective as someone who has moved here. This is my perception of what Los Angeles is today. But yeah, let's maybe get some voices that were like born and raised here as well. So we can also learn about like the maybe sort of tried and true classics that maybe aren't as like sizzling hot today, but that still are really important in terms of what it means to eat in Los Angeles. And I'm not talking about the Hall of Fame. You know how I feel about the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm, I do. Yeah, being like the list is a chance to not just be like, and here are the 101 best. It's a chance to be like, to have guest writers come in, have, I don't know, you know, longtime chefs come in and talk about what they're like. It should be more than just a list of restaurants from Bill Addison. It can be so much more than that. It can still be the list of 101, but I want a diversity of perspectives, I think, and a chance to really take a step back and capture what the year was in LA food. Again, Bill, I think, has a very solid, obviously, perspective and does a very good job with it, but there's just a, especially in the absence of a J. Gold figure, you still feel like a J. Gold shaped hole as you go through the list, right? And yeah. I feel like it can't be filled by just Bill.
What did you think of Poltergeist being at 101?
I thought it should have been higher. And I mean, I thought it was a great example where, but that goes back to the, like why is it a ranking thing? Like Poltergeist being on the 101 makes total sense. But when you go through the list and read it as like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, et cetera down, I get to some spots that I've been to like in the 50s and I'm like, Poltergeist below this though? I don't know. But and again, I shrug it off because look, like I almost don't accept it as a ranking. I'm just like, these are the spots. That's what I care about. But in terms of Poltergeist even being on it at all, and there's something almost notable about it being 101, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like instead of it being like 89 or some random number, like it's the 101st one. Being on the list, amazing. Congrats to Diego. And, you know, it belonged higher, but it's cool that it has this kind of like, you know, particular number. It has the headline number. It's a list of 101 restaurants. Number 101 is Poltergeist.
As I said, it's Brock Purdy. It's Mr. Irrelevant. You know, just got to prove him wrong. Any restaurants on the list that caught your eye that you really want to try now?
I mean, the ones at the top always that I haven't been to. Cato, I think I've seen, I'd seen recognized throughout the year, and I would put it right at the top of the list. I mean, the next time we do a Top Chef fantasy draft and bet on it, I imagine Cato might be the one that we end up betting over.
That's a $275 price point per person. So, yeah, it's going to need to be a pretty like significant thing we bet on.
Well, for me, it'll be free, so I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, you say that, but you didn't do so well on our in-season tournament bet.
Hey, I mean, look, that's small potatoes versus Top Chef. I have true instincts there.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to do our draft of the best food lists of 2023. Listener, if you are a fan of the LA Food Podcast, you know that we spend a lot of our time talking, dissecting, critiquing, lists that come out throughout the year. These are like best of food guides from The Infatuation, from Eater, from LA's, from Time Out LA, you name it. If there's a list that is gaining some buzz that makes us scratch our heads for a moment or that we just find intriguing, we tend to spend time dissecting it. And it's led to some pretty interesting conversations on the value that these lists can and maybe even should provide. Well, today we thought we would turn the tables on the journalists, the food journalists, not just of Los Angeles, but potentially of the country, and do a draft of the best lists of 2023. That's right, journalists. We are going to be making a list of your lists, essentially. Saul, how did you have the idea for this meta exercise?
It was a couple things. One, we were just talking about like every single notable list that was coming out, right? Over and over. And we kept talking about the criteria of what made a great list, right? And we were like, and some would do it right in some ways, someone would do it right in others, some we felt really missed the mark. And, you know, we like to draft. We like to like gamify this podcast a little bit. And so as we're going along, I was like, huh, wonder if we should pick our favorites for the year and see what maybe stands out of those that we think are the quintessential lists food lists of the year.
So when we think about what makes a good list, when we think about what makes a good draft pick, let's say, for the purposes of this game, what criteria are you taking into account?
Well, one is I want a level of uniqueness, right? I want it to be so for example, there are like a pretty standard like hot restaurant in LA or most essential or where to eat if you're new in Los Angeles that have the same restaurants over and over and over again. I want something that stands out and offers something a little bit new and a different perspective. I want to learn while I'm reading the list. I want to get inspired and like jot some places down as I'm going around, going along and reading. And I want to be entertained a little. You know, I want to be like, oh, this is a creative take on it. And finally, I want to understand the rigor behind it to some extent. I want to see that like something was tried and like someone tried harder than just like, you know, collating all the knowledge they have from, I don't know, reading other lists and like overlapping the restaurants into a new kind of like whatever smorgasbord of other restaurants that everyone already knows are good and I've seen 25 other times on a list. I want to see a little bit more depth than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we're on the same page here. I think I went also with, I took a little bit of the infatuation approach as well, which is obviously different publications sort of have different mandates when they're writing their lists. Some are like just designed to be highly utilitarian, right? Like what is the need here that diners have and how can we use our list to best meet that need? And some places do it really well. And I feel like there was some lists out there that served some hyper specific needs. And so I felt like that deserved recognition. And then, I agree with you. I think there's something to be said for not just unique lists, but lists that are really additive to the entire conversation. They're not just like updates or variations on a theme. It's literally like maybe a category you have never even thought about. Sometimes the author really matters. It's the messenger for the lists that makes it special. So I think that's what you'll see in mine. Look, because I'm a magnanimous, generous host, I would like to afford you the opportunity to draft first.
I appreciate it. The order I'm going to go is going from large scale and narrowed down to local. And so my first list, is actually one of my one of my very favorites that stood out this year. Both in terms of like just simply the design and production of the list and also the information it offers is one I get excited about, even though it is an annual list. And it's Eater's Where to Eat in 2023 worldwide. So Eater pulls together, I think it's 10 cities across the world that they dub as culinary destinations for the new year. And I'm sure other outlets do this. I know other outlets do this a little bit, but I trust Eater more in some ways. And I really appreciate the perspective they offer on places like Asheville or Guatemala City or Dakar. And it's one of those lists that gets me jotting down ideas for lads trips that we plan every year, guys trips that we plan every year. And just makes me, again, inspired to think about where we might go next and what I might want to experience next when it comes to food.
Wait, so you said they collate the lists of basically like the top markets. Is Asheville a top market?
No, I don't think they collate the list of top markets. I don't know actually the full process behind this list. I was trying to go through and read if they fully describe the process. But between the combined knowledge of either editors, I guess, and whatever research they do, they pull out places that I think are not on the radar currently as food destinations. And they essentially try to define or identify what might be next. So it's the opposite of saying like, hey, everyone's going to Mexico City already. We're not going to put Mexico City down again. I think they're trying to say like, hey, you might not know that like Calcutta in India is actually emerging as a food destination, or Albuquerque is emerging, or Sardinia in Italy is emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, and like, instead of going to Rome or
Paris,
what's it called? Florence, whatever. Check out Sardinia. Maybe you haven't mm-hmm. never even tried it. So I think that's what I like about this list. And that's not a list of destinations that I'm familiar with typically that they lay out.
Are there any spots or any destinations that really piqued your interest?
I mean, funny enough, Asheville is a place that my parents actually bought like a property in recently. And they were talking about how much they liked it over the last couple of years. And I was like, all right, Asheville sounds kind of cool. And then next thing you know, Eater has Asheville on their list of top destinations. And I'm like, hell yeah, definitely got to go. It's funny because, you know, obviously the American locations are just more accessible. Albuquerque mm-hmm. is not too far away. So it's like the ones that immediately come to mind as possible to reach. But there is like, I mean, I don't know if I can make it to Guatemala City, right? That'd be fucking dope. We like traveling to Latin and South America. Maybe that'll be a thing one time.
Fair enough. Okay, that's a good pick. I'll give you that. That was unexpected. And I'll let you know, I don't actually have... There may not be any Eater on my list, so I'm glad we gave Eater some shout-outs because they do good work. I'm torn on my first draft pick because I feel like you're going to shame me for this pick because I feel like you think it's obvious, but I just genuinely think that the best list that came out this year was the best restaurants in Mexico City, 25 essential dishes to eat. I think that was the best list that came out in 2023.
No, I'm not going to shame you for it. The only reason I didn't include it is because we just went so deep on it, like, what, two episodes ago. And so we talked about it so much. I didn't want to replicate. Given we only have five picks, I want to go for something new. It's absolutely one of the best lists of the year. And really what stands out about it is the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
The process of selecting those restaurants and what they were going for and their criteria is something I'd love to see more of in different places as well.
Yeah, and if I didn't mention it, this was the list that was published a couple months ago, November 14th, in the New York Times Style magazine. And, you know, the reason I picked this is really also to give the reporter their flowers, you know? I feel like I'd like to recognize the work that they did in putting together this list, in putting together the process, the panel of people and experts that they talked to really uncover or to actually just shed light on these gems that don't need uncovering to people in Mexico City, apparently, but to everybody who relies on the same old lists of where to eat in Mexico City. I think this kind of blew my mind because I'm definitely someone who has relied on other sources' lists. So shout out to Deborah Dunn and all the other people who put together that list. All right, it's time for pick number two. Your pick number two.
My number two pick is the LA Times Hall of Fame restaurants. Yes.
Drink.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it. I knew that you were going to, in some way, shape, or form, use this as a way to shame me. And it didn't, you didn't help your case when you just kept reinforcing it in the last segment.
Well, okay. So the Hall of Fame, there's the 101 list, which we discussed. The Hall of Fame is different. In the opening of the Hall of Fame, Bill Addison writes, among our region's profound dining possibilities, a handful of restaurants become so entwined in our culture, so much a part of what it means to eat and live in Southern California, that they surpass the notion of annual list making, and they have a place of honor of all time. I think, and when we actually discussed this idea with the world's 50 best, because when you reach number one of the world's 50 best, you are no longer, I think, eligible for the top list or certainly can't be number one. I think you might not no longer.
You're not eligible for the list for, I think maybe ever, but at least like 5 years or something like that.
Right. And I think that's, look, for the world 50 best, it's a different scope and a different idea. For LA and LA Times, I think it's a great idea. I think this is a great idea for a list. And I think it started in 2019 when they did the inaugural Hall of Fame class with Bill Addison. You made the point in your opening monologue about the LA 101 that you didn't like this because you'd want to see how these restaurants continue to stack up on the list, or whether or not they deserve to be on it over time or fall off, et cetera. All fair points. But I do think there's something to be said about a restaurant that has become so ingrained in the landscape that even, and for example, like they belong on the Hall of Fame, even if they close, right? Yeah. Like it's important to have a historical document about what restaurants survived, like, you know, continue to serve and represent Southern California and Los Angeles over time. And the only thing I would want made differently about the Hall of Fame list is that it's more prominent and people are reminded over and over about the Hall of Fame. They should have a fucking building like enshrining the LA Hall of Fame restaurants, in my opinion, because it's history. It's important. Yeah. And I'm excited to see which restaurants continue to get onto it. I also think this is also primarily a Bill Addison driven list. There's a couple other entries there. This is one where I'd want to see for sure a more diverse sort of selection process. It has to be for a Hall of Fame, right? Like it really has to be. So a great list, a great idea, one that I think is important in really any major city, and shout out.
Well, I can promise you that one day the LA Food Podcast Foundation will fund the construction of the museum for this Hall of Fame. So I've said that here, and I will see that through before I die. Look, this is a fine take. Okay. I just think that the Hall of Fame, as I said a couple podcasts ago, I just think that it does some restaurants dirty. Some, because I genuinely think that like Jit La Da could still be in the top 10 to 15 restaurants in Los Angeles. And I feel like, to your point, I don't know how many people are reading the Hall of Fame because it's kind of hidden. It's kind of out of the way. So to me, it's really just a disservice to a restaurant like Jit La Da and a couple of the other spots on the list. But do I think that restaurants like that deserve to be enshrined and memorialized in some way, shape, or form? Absolutely. And in that sense, I'm happy that this list exists.
Yeah, it's really more a marketing issue than anything. It's more like a, hey, let's draw attention to the fact that like LA Times restaurant critics have done the work of pulling together like these particularly important spots, and we should be paying attention to them as much as possible, even more so than an annual list.
Okay, my second pick. Are you ready for this? I'm getting weird. Well, not weird. I'm just going a little bit off the beaten track to a publication that I don't know that we've discussed on the podcast before, and that is LA Taco. Okay. LA Taco put out a list of the 13 best pupusas in Los Angeles by an LA Salvi. And this list was pretty amazing because pupusas are one of those foods that are everywhere in Los Angeles. I would argue that there are probably as many pupusa stands as there are taco stands in the city, especially in like certain pockets of the city. Yet I feel like, can you off the top of your head name like 10 to 15 like famous pupusa stands the same way you can taco trucks? I can't.
Not unless you're talking about the Go Get 'Em Mart at the corner of Portia and Sunset Boulevard, where we would often go.
No, I feel like that's the thing, right? With pupusas, like people have their local pupuserias, right? But it's pretty cool to have this list, which breaks it down neighborhood by neighborhood to like, you know, the vendor at the corner of Olympic and Pico, you know, like literally that specific. It's such good journalism. It's so interesting. There's a good mix of like street vendors and like tried and true sit down places, which also like an underrated sit down restaurant experience is going to a Salvadorian restaurant and having pupusas, which I don't know that you and I have ever done, but I've done on my own with my wife, and I definitely recommend it. Haragua is my place of choice on Beverly, and it is on this list. But I just love this list. I thought it was excellent, so different.
Love it. And when you started talking, I was like, oh my God, because my next pick, number three, is an LA taco list.
No way.
However, yeah. For a second, I was like, holy shit, we actually did overlap. However, mine was their list of the 69 best tacos in LA in 2023. Similar reasoning to you. I mean, just like look, yes, there are some recognizable names on the spot, but they went super deep. They named a particular taco that they at each location while getting into sort of like what makes that particular stand great. And it's just such a wealth of knowledge, right? And like really, I mean, LA Taco, I feel like really stands out as like feet on the ground trying pupusas at every corner, right? And getting deep into the streets of LA, so to speak, and bringing up the perspective. So wanted to shout them out here. I'm going to use this list to inform how I eat in LA, and certainly one that stood out.
Who put that list together?
It's LA Taco staff, which I also appreciate, right? Like, I like having multiple perspectives in on the list.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, LA Taco, we gave you your flowers, but now I'm going to the evil older brother, the Los Angeles Times, with my third pick. I am picking a list by Jen Harris, which she put together in September on where to find the best Italian sub sandwiches in LA. This list is very pertinent to me this year because, I've embarked on a journey to try 100 epic LA sandwiches in 365 days, a journey that is now in the rearview mirror, I'm proud to say. But this list, thank you very much, sir. Yes, this list definitely informed a lot of my picks, and I was really impressed with the sort of like depth and geographical diversity with which Jen Harris put together this list. Yes, there's like tried and true places like Bay Cities on here, right? That everybody's heard of. And there's sort of like the more new school cool places like Bodega Park, right? But then there's places like Corsica Italian Delicatessen, like an old school Italian deli in Sunland, deep in the valley. Like, I don't think we know anybody who lives in Sunland. Of course, hello to all of our listeners who live in Sunland. but I was just very impressed with this list. A lot of deep cuts. One thing that has really stood out to me this year is there are so many Italian sandwiches out there. It seems like every deli has an Italian sandwich. There's a lot of them to sort through, and I'm just really impressed with the work Jen did. So kudos, Jen Harris. You got the number three spot on my list.
Dope. Good shout out, man. And also, wait. I like the humility in recognizing another sandwich list. Good for you, yeah. Bud.
No, I will say this is better than mine. In as far as concerns Italian sub sandwiches, I think I did like probably like 15 sub sandwiches throughout the year, but clearly Jen ate probably like 50 sub sandwiches and whittled down her list to like the best 20 Italian sandwiches, which like is incredible. And I don't agree that all of the ones on this list are that good. Like, for example, she has Ghost Sando Shop in there, which I personally wasn't a huge fan of. And it's one of those like more hotter new places. But you know what? I just respect the hustle.
Love it. I will say, as a quick aside, as we go through these lists, I do find myself wishing that there was an easy go-to place I could capture, like, the top 10 or 15 LA countdown spots of the year, right? And get your commentary on them. I'm just throwing that out there. I'd love to see it.
Are you suggesting a website of sorts?
Maybe. Yes, I am.
It feels like we're teasing something. Listener, there's nothing to tease.
No, you have no idea. Yeah.
but it would be cool if we did, right? Thanks for the feedback. If you can put it in the company suggestion box, Saul, I'll read it. I'll read it with, along with all of your other suggestions.
Yeah. That box is getting pretty full. No, take it. All right. Number four. This is a fun one. This is one that I want to shout out our friends at The Infatuation. It's the celebrity-owned restaurant power rankings. Now, this is a funny one, right? Because this is, we just had a conversation about influencer restaurants, right? And kind of celebrity-owned restaurants and how they work. I remember reading this list when it came out and like being surprised at learning at who was behind certain great restaurants that I never knew were investors or creators behind them. And it's just kind of a fun thing for the LA landscape in particular. This is celebrity restaurants in LA. And just seeing the different kinds of models and levels of like fine dining to casual and what different celebs have tried. It's just a fun little list. It's not going to like reshape. I'm probably not going to revisit this list for how I eat. But in terms of like a little snapshot of LA, I thought it was a fun list and a good idea. Look forward to seeing how the power rankings change over time.
No, I like that too, because it's as I said, with The Infatuation, it's a very utilitarian list. Like anytime you have guests coming out from out of town who are sort of taken with like the Los Angeles celebrity thing, you can look at that list and be like, hey, which of these restaurants that's owned by a celebrity is actually good? And it's a list you can use, which, I have to applaud our friends over at The Infatuation for. Okay, my pick number four. We're going over to another publication that we don't talk about as often as we should, and that is LAist. LAist, okay?
Yep.
Friend of the pod, Gab Chabran, does a series called Cheap Fast Eats, in which he goes to a bunch of different neighborhoods and picks like five places that are cheap and they're fast, right? Basically, a really accessible guide to exploring a certain neighborhood. Most times, like, you know, it's neighborhoods that you're pretty familiar with. It's still helpful to like get a sense of like what is affordable and like good in those neighborhoods. But I really liked this one on Gardena that he put out in October. Gardena, it's a, you know, city that's southeast of like downtown Los Angeles. And I have been before, but really just passing through. I've never gone to like actually explore the city. And LA's Cheap Fast Eats is a great, super accessible way to find out, what do I eat there? And I really liked it. There's places like Gardena Bowl Coffee Shop, which is iconic, though I've never been. There's like a little burger shack called Pit Burger on this list. There's an entire food court called the Tokyo Central Food Court, which specializes in like a bunch of different Japanese foods. It's honestly like food reporting at its best. So shout out Gob, shout out LA's. I love this series and I loved Cheap Fast Eats Gardena.
Dope. I like that. I like that shout out, actually. I wasn't aware of that list. And I like the structure of a neighborhood guide.
Yeah. Well, the infatuation stuff, they do neighborhood guides, but I feel like this has a really specific sort of mandate, right? Cheap, fast. And I do think that they cover places that other places don't. So I'm really on board with that.
My last pick, we're moving out of LA again. My first and last picks, bookend. We're going out of LA. We're coming to Seattle. We're coming home. And this is a list I liked because it featured Kenji Lopez Alt. So Kenji, famous food writer, New York Times bestseller, Serious Eats contributor, and great food personality who moved to Seattle, I think now a couple years ago, and has been, through via his Instagram, kind of elevating the Seattle food scene in a way where we did not have a voice before, I think. Like, Seattle had no J. Gold. And I'm not saying Kenji's a J. Gold type, but in terms of profile and in terms of respect that he has given his background and expertise, he's really sort of changed the game. And there's an article in the South Seattle Emerald, which is an outlet focused more on minority perspectives in the city. I think it used to be even defined as an African-American outlet. I think they've now broadened their purview a little bit on that. And he's interviewed on his favorite South End restaurants. So South Seattle is a bit more culturally diverse, I'll say, than some of the other parts of North and Central Seattle. And it really goes through and both talks to Kenji and collates his favorite restaurants in Chinatown, Soto, White Center, etc. And it's a really, really good guide for, you know, again, when you want to get out from the typical, you know, love eater, but like typical eater of Central 38. Right. And the main list that people go back and back and back to all over again. This is one that's a bit more broad and diverse and co-signed by someone you can really trust. And so I think that list in the South Seattle Emerald is a great reference point for anyone visiting or living in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, let me ask you, do you think Kenji Lopez Alt is veering into the territory of being overrated?
No. Kenji, I get why you asked that, because he is blowing up in a sense. I got onto Kenji during COVID, and it was funny. I really recently met up with an old friend from college who lives out here on the east side of Seattle, and I hadn't seen him in a while. He also got into Kenji during COVID before he had moved up to Seattle, as he was still in the Bay Area. I think Kenji's legit, man. Kenji has like because of his ability. He doesn't just like choose, like he's really able to explain why a place is doing something well because of his background, both as a chef and as a scientist. Like is really, he doesn't just say like, this is great. He says, this is what I like about it. This is what they did well. This is what they could have done a little bit better. And it's like a real like it's casual and quick, but it's a real insight into the restaurant. And so no, I'm gonna say no. That said, I haven't seen his sushi show or any of his TV appearances really. So I don't know about that end of it, but in terms of a food Instagram, a food influencer, we can say, an author, no. I'll, yeah.
Well, I feel like that's where it can really go tits up for someone like that, meaning like if your persona doesn't translate well to the next level, which is TV, I think that can definitely be a problem. And we've definitely seen that happen. Like, you know, Katie Parla, who's this like influencer slash author that lives in Rome and is like all about Italian food. She makes great recipes. She does like great books and whatnot. I don't believe she's translated that well on television. She's had some cooking shows on like some, you know, low reach channels and whatnot. I feel like that's a really difficult level to crack. And I'll be interested to see if Kenji can. But I do think he has an opportunity to sort of be like the next Alton Brown.
Yeah, that's a good, that's an interesting comp. I think he wouldn't go as like zany and entertainment-y as Alton. But in terms of, yeah, I can see that energy possibly fitting. He's got like corny dad joke vibes, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And nerdy scientist vibe, right? So yeah. Shout out Kenji.
Okay, my number five, and I'm going to be quick on this one because it is a list we have talked about in the past, but I just don't feel right not recognizing it. And that is, again, I'm going back to our mortal enemies over at the New York Times, and that is the 25 best restaurants in Los Angeles right now.
Wow.
By Tejal Rao. I mean, this is hilarious because we talked about this list like a few months ago when it came out. And I remember your first take was like, this is clearly a list by someone who doesn't live in Los Angeles. And literally the first thing that it says on the byline is Tejal Rao is critic at large for the New York Times. She lives in Los Angeles. Amazing. Yeah.
Well, let me edit. So the critique of that, the real critique of that is that it seems to be, and this is correct, because for a New York Times audience, which is much broader than LA, right? It's for an audience that doesn't live in LA, that list, right? Because so as I'm looking at it, I'm like, it's a little bit of a 101 with some like spice. So a little bit of like, you know, bit of like real insight splashed through there. Yeah.
But I think this is pretty much what the 101 could be distilled to its essence, meaning like, I think this, the fact that the 101 came out and then I went back to this list made me like this list even more. And that's because I feel like a lot of these places, when put together, they do what Bill Addison said he was trying to do with the 101, which is offer a snapshot of what it's like to eat in Los Angeles right now. And I think that if that's the goal and you're not just looking at like an exhaustive list of what are the best restaurants in Los Angeles, I think this really does a good job of capturing what it's like to eat in Los Angeles right now. And for that, I just had to like really go back and give my appreciation to this list there. And also, I think it's validated in that a lot of the restaurants on here do appear quite high on Bill Addison's list. Not all of them, but I, for example, I would question this list if it didn't include Cato, the number one restaurant on the 101, but it does include Cato. You know what I mean? Not to say that would like exclude it from contention, but I just feel really good about this pick. I'm happy it was still on the board. And I feel like this is going to be the sleeper pick that everybody regrets sleeping on.
Fair enough. No, it's legitimately a really good list. I think you might be right that in terms of a snapshot of LA, it almost functions better, as blasphemic as that might sound. I mean, look, there's a funny thing. I wonder if Bill low key is like, I got to pick 101 though. Like that, like that's it's a J Gold institution, the 101 list, right? Really?
Yeah.
And I don't know if just putting it on Bill's lap to replicate is the best idea. 101's a lot. And you really like sometimes more is less when it comes to trying to capture an idea. I mean, oftentimes, I would argue, more is less. And this 25-list restaurant from Tejal, I think almost more weirdly precisely gets into, like, gives you an idea of, like, this is what eating in LA is like right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Father Saul, this was fun. I think we've given a lot of reporters a lot of flowers. I'll also post this on social media so we can tag them and, you know, maybe they'll see it and feel seen. Who knows? before we leave, I would like to end. This is actually going to be the last episode of the year, believe it or not. So it's been a special year, the first year of the LA Food Podcast. I'm so grateful for everybody that's listened. I'm grateful to everybody who's put up with Father Saul. But before we leave, I feel like it's only fair to give the listeners a really, really quick version of Shitty Yelp Review of the Week.
I was thinking even we could have made it. I mean, I didn't tell you this beforehand, so you won't be prepared. I'll do mine Shitty Yelp Review of the Year. This is the end of the year, baby.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right, this is a real bad one. One time, Emily was out of town. She was in D.C., packing up her place there. And Father Saul was doing a little bit of work, having a drink. Then, you know, having another drink. And doing a bit more work. And then, you know, not doing as much work and having another drink. little party for myself, right? You know, you live in a one bedroom, you're always like crowded, girlfriend leaves town and you're like, you know what, I'm gonna let loose a little bit. Here's what happened. She left her work computer here on the TV stand that we have, which is a little precarious, it's thin. And little sloppily, Father Saul gets up, knocks over the TV stand, breaks the plant that was on it, and knocks her computer off. It hits a metal like piece of our table and breaks. Now, it actually, and literally, you have to imagine, like, it was so, it's been quiet in the apartment all day. It was so loud and so stupid. And I'm just like looking at this mess on the floor. And I pick up her computer, I open it, and it's just like a black screen with like an error message. And I'm like, holy shit, I am the, like, this is the most embarrassing, embarrassing way to go down. Now, luckily, she was some, like, I think she didn't lose any work. She was able to recover the computer. Somehow it all worked out fine. I don't really know how. But it was a moment, it literally was the moment where I was standing there being like, I am a bad boyfriend. Goddamn. This is a bad review right here.
This is just like, you have fundamental flaws as a human being. That's what this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is deeper than his boyfriend. But let's not worry about that. Let's worry about the other implications.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that is a solid... I'd say that's a one star just because it wasn't on purpose.
One star was on purpose, and I'd say one star because the consequences ended up not being as bad as they could have been.
Yeah, yeah. That might bump you up to 1.5 stars, honestly.
All right, okay. You got one for me, or are you going to?
Yeah, of the year. So listeners might not know this, but I train for marathons. And what this requires is that I wake up super early in the morning. Like, I wake up at, like, you know, we're talking 3 a.m. on Saturdays so that I can, like, pound some granola and like let it marinate before I go out on like a 16 mile run, right? My wife wakes up way later than I do, okay? Because who wakes up at 3 a.m.? That's insane. I will grant that, right? But one morning while I was awake at, you know, probably like 3:30 a.m. or something, I was just out here watching a soccer game on like very low volume, like not like almost silent, right? It's dark, right? My wife gets up to go to the bathroom, and which is a normal thing people do in the middle of the night, right? And yeah. I always like, I didn't expect her to be up, so I said something like, "Hey, are you okay?" And she didn't know I had woken up, so she thought there was an intruder in the house. She thought there was an intruder in the house, and she screams like I've never heard anyone, like literally, like fear, straight fear, and literally. Out of panic, I'm trying to like calm her down. So I start screaming back at her. I start screaming even louder back at her. And she's just like freaking the fuck out because she thinks I'm like an intruder who's not only there, but now yelling at her too. You know, it's probably blurry vision. It's the middle of the night. Literally, this could have been an Oscar Pistorius situation. Like if there was a gun in the house, I might not be alive right
Jesus
now.
Jesus Christ.
But like,
what a reference.
But, like, yeah, I deep cut right there. But needless to say, that was not my best moment. And since then, we have a rule in the house, which is if I'm up early and I hear her get up, I don't say a word. I'm just quiet. That's it.
Damn, I'm enjoying imagining that scenario. That sounds like I can picture it in my mind's eye. It's very entertaining. I great year, bro. This is a great time. Glad we got to do the list. Next year, by the way, I think I almost want to go deeper than bad boyfriend. I'm a good boyfriend. I don't know about you. I struggle to find stories of me being a bad boyfriend so regularly. I wonder if we can go to bad roommate stories back from our old days.
No,
give the listeners a real deep insight into our relationship.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to have to think about that one.
you got stories, though.
Yeah, no, I've got lots of stories on you. Absolutely. Yeah, no, we can mix it up. Maybe it's just shitty Yelp review in general. Anytime
sure,
we
yeah,
deserved
yeah.
one. Yeah, yeah.
Anytime we're bad people. Yeah, yeah.
This is good. This is good. Well, today we are – well, I think overall, though, we've been nice, not naughty. So we probably deserve some gifts today or this week as the holiday approaches.
What are you talking about?
Because this – bro, this episode – can you tell that the Hornitos be hitting?
There we go.
Yeah. So basically, this episode is going to air like December 22nd. So, you know, cool. this is very much the holiday episode. So I just want to wish our listeners happy holidays. We love you. Thank you for spending time with us. We'll be back with in the new year with new content. Next week, you'll get a best of episode, so be on the lookout for that. Father Saul, happy holidays and safe travels, bud.
You too, man. Glad we got to do this. Love the pod.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the LA Food Podcast. Thanks as always to Father Saul for joining us this time for a very special holiday party edition. And thank you to you, dear listener, for taking this journey with us in 2023. If you like what you heard today or at any point throughout the year, please go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating, a review, subscribe. Seriously, that would be the best holiday gift of all time, and I would be forever grateful. It really helps us make our way up those Spotify and Apple charts. We'll be back next week with our final episode of 2023. It's going to be a best of episode, and you're not going to want to miss it. If you're looking for me in the meantime, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Threads at the LA Countdown. That's TheLaCountown. You can also find me on Instagram at LA Food Pod. That's LAFOODPOD. Happy holidays, everybody.